All right, we're in Matthew 8. We finished up the Sermon on the Mount. So go ahead and open up to Matthew 8. And I thought maybe it'd be a good time just to skip a stone over where we're going, just to get some basic highlights of what's going on in the next few chapters. The next section, I've kind of broken it down into chapters 8 to 16. And so let's just skip a stone over the surface of these chapters and just kind of give an idea of where we're going over the next few chapters. I've entitled this message, "The Full Enlightenment of Israel." That's what's happening now. Look at the end of Matthew 7. Just look at the last couple of verses in Matthew 7, verse 28. And this is at the end of that Sermon on the Mount. "And it came to pass when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority, not as the scribes," not as the religious system. Remember, that's the whole, one of the major points in the Sermon on the Mount was they had to separate from the apostate religious system. The apostate religious system had buried the written law, the law of Moses in its written form, and had buried that under their traditions and under their interpretations and under their commentary. So when they taught the law, they would say, well, so-and-so said this, and then another so-and-so said something else, and this is what we're going with now, but it could change. And they couldn't speak authoritatively about the law. They buried it under the traditions, the changing traditions of men. But Christ comes and he rips off all those false teachings, all those traditions, all those interpretations, all those commentaries that have buried the written word of Moses, the written word of God as revealed through Moses. And he held that up purified for them in that Sermon on the Mount. He teaches with authority. And so now he's going to, as he comes down off the mount, the people are astonished, they're amazed at his teaching, and now he's going to back that teaching up with signs of the company, of the kingdom. It's as though now, when you think of it in a light context, he's going to put on display the light. He's going to enlighten Israel with the light. The light blazes in the next couple chapters. He puts on display, he manifests fully his ministry to the nation of Israel with numerous unmistakable and undeniable signs of the kingdom. And I'm going to read down through my study Bible here. We won't look at verses, but just to give you an idea over the next couple chapters of the kinds of things he's going to be doing. We're going to see Jesus heals a leper. This is my reference Bible. I'm just going to read some of the headings that are from that. Of course, already they're wrong. Jesus doesn't really heal a leper. And we'll look at that and you'll see what I mean there. But let's just go and get the idea. He's going to deal with leprosy. He's going to heal the centurion's servant. He's going to heal Peter's wife's mother. He's going to still the waves and the wind. He's going to be casting out demons. That's the kind of things that he's going to be put on full display. These are the signs, undeniable signs and wonders that the king has arrived and the kingdom, and therefore the kingdom is at hand. Over to chapter 10. And I'm just saying we're going to just skip a stone over the surface just to see the kind of things he's going to be dealing with here and kind of see where we're going. I think that'll make it easier as we work our way through. In chapter 10, there are multitudes responding to the light, but it becomes evident that the sheep are scattered and they have no shepherds. The people who should have been shepherds, the religious leaders in Jerusalem, were false shepherds. They were wolves in sheep clothing. And so he commissions the 12, and he's going to appoint them to be the shepherds of this believing remnant. And again, the heading of my reference Bible is "The 12 are instructed and sent forth," and he goes out and he's going to send them out to teach. When we get to chapter 11, we're going to start seeing to this light, this blazing light he puts on display through his signs and wonders and his ministry and message, that there's going to be a growing negative response to that light. Just go over to chapter 11 and let's just read a passage or two, just a verse or two to kind of get this idea. The light is shining. He sends out shepherds for those who believe. because the shepherds in place aren't doing their job. And there's now going to start an increasingly negative response to him and his teaching. Look at verse chapter 11, verse 12. "And from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force." Go down to verse 16. "But whereunto shall I liken this generation? It is like unto children sitting in the markets and calling unto their fellows and saying, 'We have piped unto you, and ye have not danced. We have mourned unto you, and ye have not lamented. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, he has a devil. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they said, behold, a man gluttonous and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners.'" And we'll see in a little bit, they accuse him of being under the power of Satan as well. "But wisdom is justified of their children." So as you go through here, especially beginning in chapter 11, there's going to be this increasing negative response that's going to ultimately lead to their plotting to Jesus' destruction and, of course, the death on that cross. Now, when we get to chapter 13, he's going to take this blazing light and he's going to begin to withdraw it. The blazing light is going to predominantly receive a negative response, and he begins to withdraw the light, and he begins to teach in parables now. Look at verse chapter 13. And these mysteries of the kingdom of heaven presented in parables. Verse 2, Matthew 13, verse 2. "And great multitudes were gathered together unto him, so that he went into a ship and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. And he spoke many things unto them in parables." He begins to teach in parables now, and he explains why he's doing that. Go down to verse 10 of Matthew 13, verse 10. "And the disciples came and said unto him, why speakest thou unto them in parables? And he answered and said unto them, because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For," and then go down to verse 13, "therefore I speak to them in parables, because they see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand." And so now he begins to withdraw that light. He begins teaching in parables, because what he's been trying to teach them, what he's presented to them, so far they've rejected. They have physical ears and physical eyes to physically see, but they've rejected his witness and his message. And therefore, they don't have spiritual ears and spiritual eyes to understand. And he begins now teaching specifically to his disciples, especially the 12. And he's going to give these kingdom parables, one here, the sower, and then later he gives one, the wheat and the tares. And he's going to show how using those two parables, you can understand all the parables. But those who didn't have spiritual eyes and ears wouldn't be able to understand. He begins to withdraw the light, and then in the end of chapter 13 and on through chapter 15, he winds down his Galilean ministry and heads into the darkness of Judea and Jerusalem that's going to lead to his death. Look down, we'll just look at one place here, chapter 13, verse 57. He's returned to Nazareth. This is one of his last stops here in his Galilean ministry. He returns to Nazareth, and he's rejected by his own people. And verse 57, "And they were offended in him. But Jesus said unto them, a prophet is not without honor, save in his own country and in his own house." And that's where he's going to begin now to go back, and he's going to head back to Judea and Jerusalem, and the darkness that lays ahead for him there. Then in chapter 16, and this will finish off kind of our overview, he's going to teach the 12 what will be required of them in resisting the apostate religious system. He's already taught them in the Sermon on the Mount that they have to separate from that apostate religious system, and they needed to not fear doing that. And he's going to warn them in chapter 16. He's going to talk about the blindness of the Pharisees and the leaven of the Pharisees and that religious system. So that kind of gives you an overview. That's where we're going. And then once we get out of chapter 16, we'll be in the heading towards that cross and his death on that cross. Let's go back to Matthew 8 now. Matthew 8. Now let's look at the first sign and wonder that Jesus is going to, that at least it's not the first sign and wonder Jesus manifested in his ministry, but it's the first one Matthew puts in place in his presentation of the signs and wonders in support of the king, the kingdom, and his message about that. So let's look at Matthew chapter 8. And keeping in mind, the people at the last verses of, from the Sermon on the Mount, the people are astonished at his doctrine because he taught with authority and not as scribes. And now he's going to provide signs and wonders for his teaching. He's going to back it up with signs and wonders that God has promised to the nation of Israel. And that's, we're going to look at that a little more depth as we go through here. But let's look at the first sign and see why I'm saying that the heading in my reference Bible is wrong. It says Jesus heals a leper, but he only heals him indirectly. He really does something else, and that's really what we want to emphasize here. Look at verse 1. When he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. The issue here isn't healing. He's not even asking for healing. He's asking for being made clean, cleanness. Verse 3, and Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will. Now, all you, hopefully, who have been listening to the Romans and Matthew study will automatically say, recognize that Jesus is proclaiming there to be Jehovah. I am. When he, God gave Israel, before the Exodus, his I am name, I will, is just another version of I am. I will be, I am, I will. Those are all him declaring that he is Jehovah. He is the Jehovah that involves that name given to Israel. And he says, I am, I will. He is willing to do something that Israel and this leper can't do for themselves. And he said, he put forth his hand and he touched him. No one else would touch a leper. He touches him and he says, I am, I will. Be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy wasn't healed, it was cleansed. And we'll see the importance of that in this next verse. Why that is so important to understand this cleansing concept with leprosy. Obviously, this also meant he was healed, but the main point Jesus is making here is the cleansing, and Matthew is making here has to do with the cleansing concept. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, and saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said unto him, see thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. So he's going to now, sign of the cleansing of leprosy is for a specific audience. It's not for the general public. It's for the priesthood. He's supposed to now go and present himself to the priest, and the priest is supposed to be doing something at this point. And if the priest had, and the priesthood had done what they were supposed to do, they would have recognized Jesus as the Christ and as Jehovah in the flesh. And that's what we're going to look at as we go on here. It's a message to the priesthood. It's supposed to remind them this through this cleansing of the leper. It should have brought to mind the cleansing of the priesthood, which should have brought to mind the cleansing of the nation, and that they needed to enter into that cleansing, which began with the ministry of John the Baptist. So that's what he's sending them to. And he's using now, they claim to be followers of Moses. And so Jesus is telling this cleansed leper to go to the priest. And he's going to use the very words of Moses to show that while they claim to follow Moses, they aren't following Moses. Because if they followed what Moses said, they would have recognized, they would have come and investigated the one who cleansed this leper and then recognized him as Jehovah. Let's go ahead and look at these, this idea of signs, though. Let's get that established in our thinking. Signs and wonders were a provision in Israel's prophetic program for affirming the message of the one speaking. Let's just go, let's flip over to Luke 10 first, because we're going to spend the rest of the time in the Old Testament. But let's just see how Luke summarizes the signs and kind of drive this point home. Signs are there not because Jesus feels sorry for people, not because he's just doing them willy-nilly. The signs, all these signs, especially here we have the sign of the cleansing of leprosy, the healing of sicknesses, and the casting out of demons are some of the primary ones. They are done for specific audiences at specific times to support his specific teaching. And that's what these signs are for. Look at chapter 10. Let's look at how Luke explains these in Luke 10. Verse 9. Well, let's begin at verse 8 so we kind of get the background. He's assigned 70 people. He's sending them out to preach. Verse 8, and into whatsoever city you enter, and they receive you, eat such things are set before you, and heal the sick that are therein, and say unto them, the kingdom of God is come near unto you. That's what these signs and these wonders are supposed to do. They're supposed to be sent out, and they carried out these signs and wonders, and they were to announce the king and the kingdom. The kingdom, the king was here, and the kingdom was nearby, was at hand. And of course, that's the whole gospel that John and Jesus taught, the gospel of the kingdom being at hand. All right, so now we're going to go and spend a lot of time in the Old Testament, because we have to look at a few things with this idea of the signs and wonders and also the leprosy. So let's first go to Exodus. Exodus 4, and let's just go way back. We're way back at the beginning, well, before Israel had even been brought out of Egypt. Remember Exodus 3? God gives the Moses to give to the nation of Israel his Jehovah name, his I am name. And we see Jesus referring to that in Matthew 8, I will. When he says I will, he's saying that he is the Jehovah of the Old Testament. I will, I'm willing, I am able to do whatever needs to be done for the nation of Israel. I will do it. I am the one. And he brings that, that's in Exodus 3, but now we want to look at the signs and wonders concept in Exodus 4. So right after he receives the Jehovah name, he goes in Exodus 4. And let's just begin at verse 1. And Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto these. So now most of us are familiar with this basic story. God's commissioning him to go and lead the people out of the land of Egypt. And he's objecting because he doesn't think the people are going to receive him. He doesn't think the people are going to believe him. And that he's really commissioned by God, by the Lord. And the Lord said unto him, verse 2, what is in thine hand? And he said, a rod. And he said, cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled before it. And I'm sure all of us would have too. He takes this rod, he throws it on the ground, and it turns into a serpent. And then the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand, and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand, and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. And what's the purpose, though? What was the purpose of doing that? Just because he wants to just amaze someone or do something like that? The purpose in verse 5 is that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob hath appeared unto these. This was a sign and a wonder that's supposed to support what Moses said, what Moses' message was. And now he gives another one. So there we have the rod and the serpent. Verse 6, and the Lord said furthermore, and now this is the one more important for our purposes here. And the Lord said furthermore unto him, put now thine hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. Remember in Matthew 8, we're dealing with leprosy. He puts his hand in his coat. And it brings it out, and it is leprous. Then he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again and plucked it out of his bosom. And behold, it was turned again as other flesh. And then it was cleansed from the leprosy. There was no more leprosy there. Verse 8. And here he's going to explain now what these signs, what these wonders are supposed to do. And it shall come to pass, verse 8, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, then they will believe the voice of the latter sign. And here we have the latter sign, of course, is that sign of the leprosy. And he's going to pick up on that now and develop that, especially when we get over to Leviticus. And that's where we're going to head next. But let's, on the way to Leviticus, let's go ahead and look at Exodus 34, and just see some more things about the sign concept. What Jesus starts doing in our Gospel of Matthew at chapter 8. Exodus 34. And here, remember in chapter 33, this is the golden calf incident. They completely broke the law, and God is now dealing with them graciously and compassionately when he should, instead of destroying the nation because they completely broke the law, he instead gives them a second giving of the law and brings them under a chastisement program. But look at let's begin at 34 and verse 10. Moses is pleading on behalf of the nation, and here he said, God says, and he said, behold, I make a covenant before all thy people. I will do marvels such as have not been done in all the earth, nor in the nation, and all the people among which thou art shall see the work of the Lord, for it is terrible. And the terrible concept there is awesome. It's going to be amazing things that I will do with thee, the nation of Israel. And so we've gone from signs, we've looked at healing, the leprosy, and now he's going to bring another sign of this kingdom. Verse 11, observe thou that which I command thee this day. Behold, I drive out before thee the Amorites. This is as they're entering the land of Canaanite, There's all kinds of Gentile nations in there, and he's going to drive those Gentile nations out. I will drive out the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. They're all going to be driven out. But why does he need to drive them out? Is it just because they're Gentile nations and he doesn't want them there? Let's look at the next verse, verse 12. Take heed to thyself, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitant of the land, whether thou goest, lest it be for a snare in the midst of thee. But ye shall destroy their altars and their images and cut down their groves. That's the problem with the Gentiles in the nation of Israel, in the land of Canaan. It's not so much the people, the Gentiles, but it's behind the Gentile nations is a satanic realm, the demons that they worship. Those are the things that are the big problem. And look how he develops this. But ye shall destroy their altars and their images and cut down their groves, for thou shalt worship no other god. See, the idea is here that when they cast out those Gentile nations, they're going to be casting out the satanic, demonic realm that rules those Gentile nations. For thou shalt worship, verse 14, no other god. For the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous god. Lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they go a-whoring after their gods. And of course, we learn of those gods are demons. And do sacrifice unto their gods, and one call thee, and you go and eat the sacrifice to their god. And thou take their daughters unto thy sons, and their daughters go a-whoring after their gods, and make thy son to go a-whoring after their gods. You get the point here? He said they need to kick them out on the one hand, just because they're Gentile nations, but more importantly, he's kicking out the demons associated with those Gentile nations. Thou shalt make no molten gods. And that's why when you go into the gospel accounts, Matthew 8, we're going to see one, he's going to be casting out demons. That's what this is about. This isn't about anything in the Gentile world or in the dispensation of grace or anything like that. He's removing the demonic element from his land, his people, his nation. And that's another sign that the kingdom is at hand, when he starts removing those false gods, the demonic gods behind the Gentile nation. All right, so there we have the background for these signs and wonders. They support Moses' teaching, they support God's teaching, and in Matthew, they're supporting Christ's teaching, especially as it comes right off that Sermon on the Mount. All right, so the doctrine of Jesus verified by signs and wonders was to enlighten the whole nation. We see that beginning in Matthew 4, where he talks about the light starting in Galilee. Why does it start in the northern kingdom, the Galilee, the northernmost part of the nation? It's because that was the first part of the nation that went into darkness. That northern kingdom was carried away by the Assyrians at first, and then a little over 100 years later, the southern kingdom, Judah and Jerusalem, was carried off by the Babylonians. And God, or Jesus, begins shining this light in Galilee, and it's rejected as we go over the next few chapters. All right, let's go over to now to Leviticus, and we'll spend the rest of the time here. Leviticus, you can go to the next slide. Leviticus 13 and 14. All right, so the leper is a special class of sign and wonder. That's what we want to focus on now, Matthew 8:1-4. And we already pointed out it's not called a healing, it's called a cleansing. And so we're going to take a look at that. Go to Leviticus. Leviticus. Cleansing of the leper is especially for the priests. It was indicative of the state of the whole nation by the time the fifth course of punishment. So if you're in Leviticus 13, keep your finger there and just find Isaiah real quick, or just listen. We're just going to read a verse or two. Well, we've read this before, but I want to show you the state of the nation in this fifth course of punishment. Remember, in the time of Jesus, we're at the end of this fifth course of punishment, near the end of this fifth course of punishment. And Isaiah was raised up in the fourth course of punishment to announce that they're worthy of going in the fifth course of punishment. And listen to how he describes the nation. And it's going to tie into this leprosy and cleansing concept. Verse 4, Isaiah 1, verse 4. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. Why should ye be stricken anymore? And the idea there is, why should God continue chastising them in the fourth course of punishment? They deserve to go on to the fifth course of punishment. He tries to teach them. He tries to discipline them. And all they do is revolt more and more. And now here, the description, he doesn't use the word leprosy, but the description is similar to that of leprosy. I'll look at the end of verse 5. The whole head is sick, and the whole hard foot, even under the head, there is no soundness, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. And what's the cure for this? Just flip over one page to verse 16. The cure for this is what they needed is to, verse 16, what evil of your doings from before mine eyes, cease to do evil. Cease to do evil. And that's the state of the nation. And when Jesus sends this leper to the priest, it's supposed to remind the leper of a whole, or the priest of a whole bunch of things. And one of them is that the whole nation needed to be cleansed. And it was remind the priest that the nation would need to go through a cleansing before he could be made, before he, God, could make them into the nation of priests, kingdom of priests, and a holy nation. And that's in Exodus 19:6, where he explains his purpose for the nation of Israel. But now I want to look at the cleansing of the leper. And the cleansing, this cleansing of the leper, as we go from Leviticus 13 and 14, leads into various cleansing in Leviticus 15, which leads into the cleansing of the priesthood in Leviticus 16. And so when Jesus sends this cleansed leper to the priest, it should have brought this whole system of cleansing to the priest's mind and should have brought him to ask who did this and recognize that the nation needed this cleansing. The priesthood and the nation needed the same cleansing this leper had. All right, so let's go. We're going to spend most of the rest of the time in Leviticus 13 and 14. Now, I'm just going to give you a warning. We're going to read through these things. Don't get bogged down in the details of these verses. The reason I'm reading them is not so much we're going to get a handle on all the sacrifices and all the ritual steps and all the things that happen. My reason for going through this is I want you to see how tedious and intricate and complicated and extensive this cleansing is. That's what you should get when you leave this passage. So don't worry about following every verse or trying to understand every step. The real takeaway for today is just to see how extensive this cleansing for leprosy is. It covers at least two chapters in Leviticus. Leviticus 13 talks about diagnosing the leprosy. Chapter 13 alone is 59 verses, and then he picks it up again in chapter 14 explaining how the priest declares a person cleansed, and that goes on in chapter 14 for 57 more verses. There's a huge amount here. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to read every word of these two chapters. We're going to focus on the first half of Leviticus 14. But the point I want you to get, so you don't feel like you're getting lost in this, isn't so much you understand every detail or recognize exactly what's going on, but just to see how tedious and extensive and intricate and complicated this process is, with the idea that when Jesus sent this leper to the priest, this is what that priest should have been doing. And the priest, we know, I'll give you at the end of the story, is the priest doesn't do that. He remains silent. So let's look at, we're just going to look at a couple verses in chapter 13. Chapter 13, let's just look at the opening of chapter 13 so we get an idea on this cleansing of the leprosy. Leprosy is a type of sin for the nation of Israel. And verse 1 in chapter 13, and the Lord spoke unto Moses and Aaron, saying, when a man shall have in the skin of his flesh a rising, a scab, a bright spot, and it be in the skin of his flesh like the plague of leprosy, he shall be brought unto Aaron the priest and unto his sons the priests. So this is a whole priesthood thing, this whole leprosy thing. And you really need to recognize this when you read Jesus sending the priest or the leper to the priest. This is one of their major functions. This is one of their major teaching things that it's supposed to be mean to them, this whole cleansing concept. And then verse 3, and we'll just read part of this and then head over to chapter 14. And this is what the priest is supposed to be doing. And he shall look on the plague of the skin of the flesh. And when the hair in the plague is turned white, you know, so he looks at the hair and the skin and see how it changes over time. And he just does all this investigation with this leprosy. Go over to verses 45 and 46 in chapter 13. Leviticus 13, 45 and 46. And we can kind of come to the conclusion that he's talking about here. Let's begin at verse 44. He is a leprous man. He's now diagnosed. He's a leprous man. He is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him utterly unclean. His plague is in his head, and the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be rent and his head bare, and he shall be put a covering over his lip and shall cry unclean, unclean. And all the days therein the plague, he shall be defiled, and he is unclean. So get in mind this cleanly concept. He's unclean. That's the big thing with the leprosy. That's what this, when Jesus sent this leper, that was what's supposed to be brought to mind for this priesthood. He should have taken that man and started checking him out and looking him over, and let's see what he should have done to verify and to pronounce and to declare he was cleansed. Let's go over to verse chapter 14. And again, the point of reading this is not going word by word and explaining every detail. The point of this is just to see how extensive this leprosy cleansing is and what the priest should have been doing that Jesus sent the leper to, what the priesthood should have been doing. Because if they had followed what Moses said and had done what they should have been doing, they would have recognized Jesus and have received him. Verse chapter 14, verse 1. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, that this shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought unto the priest. Okay, that picks it up where in Matthew 8, where Jesus sends the leper to the priest. So the priest shall, and the priest shall go forth out of the camp. He takes the leper out of the camp, and the priest shall look and behold if the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper. So this is what the beginning. This is what that priest should have done with the leper, the cleansed leper Jesus sent to him. Then shall the priest command to take for him that it is to be cleansed two birds alive and clean and clean. And cedar wood and scarlet and hyssop, and the priest shall command the one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. And for the living bird, he shall take it and the cedar wood and the scarlet and the hyssop, and shall dip them and the living bird in the blood and the water mixture of the bird that was killed over running water. And he shall sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy seven times. So you get the involvement here. He checks this, takes this leper outside the camp. He's checking him over, looking at all his through a whole body, seeing if the leprosy's gone. If it looks good, he goes through this ritual, this two bird ritual. He kills one, and he uses scarlet and hyssop and cedar wood, and dips it in the blood, dips it in the water, sprinkles it over the person. Verse 7, and he shall sprinkle upon him that it be cleansed from the leprosy seven times, and shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose into the open field. And then he's supposed to let the living bird loose. Now you'd think, okay, that sounds pretty thorough. That should take care of the job. But no, that is just the beginning of this cleansing for leprosy. Go down to verse 8. Now he's outside the camp. He's been gone through this two bird ritual. The one's killed, one sent out into the wilderness. The idea of carrying off the leprosy and carrying off the leprosy involved there and cleansing him. He's water and blood are all involved. He goes through this whole ritual. He's sprinkled. He's got all this. And now look what he has to do. Verse 8. And he that is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes and shave off his hair and wash himself in water, and he shall be made clean, that he may be clean. And after that, he shall come into the camp and shall tarry abroad out of his tent. Now he goes and completely bathes, shaves his skin, shaves his hair, so that there's no possibility of missing anything, no source of contamination. And he's allowed back into the camp. Now you'd think that would be enough. No, there's a lot more. That's just the beginning. He's going to tarry in the camp for 7 days. Now look at verse 9. But it shall be on the seventh day that he shall shave again. Now he's going to redo this whole washing concept, shaving and washing. And he'll shave off all his hair of his head and his beard and his eyebrows and all the hair he shall shave off. And he shall wash his clothes and he shall wash his flesh in water, and he shall be clean. You know, they keep coming to this point when you think it's finally going to be the end of this cleansing process, but it's not. There's a whole nother step now. That's now 7 days have gone by. He's gone through rituals. He's been cleansed and re-cleansed. He's been washed and re-washed. He's been investigated and reinvestigated. Now look on the verse 10. Now we're at the eighth day. And on the eighth day, he shall take two lambs without blemish and one ewe lamb and the first year without blemish and 3/10 deals or measures of fine flour for a meat offering mingled with oil and a log of oil. So now there's a whole new offering that's going to be offered, this meat offering, and now oil is added in. We've had blood, we've had water, we've had oil, we've had the two birds, and now we have two lambs, and there's going to be a whole nother set of sacrifices put in play here. And the priest, verse 11, that maketh him clean shall present the man that is made clean, and those things before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle, the congregation. And the priest shall take one lamb and offer him for a trespass offering, and the log of oil and a wave offering. So now we've got a trespass offering, a meat offering, a trespass offering, a wave offering. And this is 8 days after all the other stuff, the eighth day after he's gone through all this other stuff. Verse 13, and he shall slay the lamb in the place where he shall kill the sin offering and the burnt offering. Now we have two more offerings, a sin offering, a burnt offering in the holy place. And as the sin offering is the priest, so is the trespass offering. It is most holy. So now he's going through all these sacrifices and through the two lambs. And the priest, verse 14, shall take some of the blood of the trespass offering, and the priest shall take and put it on the right right ear that is to be cleansed, and upon the thumb of the right hand, and upon the great toe of the right foot. You know, the point of this is not to be tedious. This, can you see how long and involved this is? Every point you get to think that the guy's finally cleansed, there's just another whole set of rituals, a whole set of things that are involved in this cleansing. And now he's involved in the sacrifice, and they first he puts the blood on the earlobe and on the right thumb and on the right toe. And of course, the idea there is that it encompasses the whole body, the whole person even. Not so much just the external body, but the whole person. And he puts that on. Certainly, this is over now. This cleansing's done now. But no, verse 15. And then the priest shall take some of the log of oil and pour it into the palm of his hand. And the priest shall dip his right finger in the oil that is in his left hand and shall sprinkle of the oil with his finger seven times before the law. So now he's sprinkling oil before the law, and the rest of the oil that's in his hand, he's going to put in the same spot he put the blood before, on the ear, on the right hand, and on the right big toe. And the blood of the trespass offering and the remnant of the oil is going to pour over the head of him that is to be cleansed. Finally, and the priest shall make an atonement for him before the Lord. Now the person is ready to be brought back into worship with the Lord. Certainly, that's it. That's it. He's in atonement with the Lord. It's what it says. Well, look, it goes on to even more. Look at verse 19. And the priest shall offer the sin offering. Now we have the sin offering, and make an atonement for him that is to be cleansed from all his uncleanness. And afterward, he shall kill the burnt offering, and the priest shall offer the burnt offering and the meat offering upon the altar, and the priest shall make atonement for him. And now, finally, he shall be clean. So hopefully you're all exhausted. That's what that priest was supposed to do when that leper presented himself. He was supposed to take him and check him out. He was supposed to do the two-bird ritual. He was supposed to verify his cleanness. He was supposed to watch him for 7 days and then carry out all these sacrifices on the eighth day. And he should have been looking into these things. That's what Jesus was sending that leper to do. All the things just listed there. And I'll just more out of humor's sake, we ended at verse 20, but look what Moses does in verse 21. And we won't read anymore. I won't exhaust you anymore. But verse 21, and if he be poor. See, the first 20, what we talked about was just for those who had some money. Now he goes through the whole thing again for someone who doesn't have any money. And to go through the whole ritual again, step by step by step. That's what was supposed to happen in Matthew 8. He sent that leper, that cleansed leper, to be declared cleansed by that priest. If that priest had been following the word of Moses, as he claimed to be, he would have carried out that long, tedious, complicated, intricate, extensive ritual for the cleansing of the leper. And if he had done that, it would have brought to mind something else. Flip over a page. If you were in chapter 14 of Leviticus, if you go to chapter 15, it's all about cleansing again, the imperative for cleansing based on that leprosy cleansing. And then chapter 16, Now he deals with priesthood cleansing, the cleansing of the priesthood. See, when if that priest in Jesus' day was doing what he should have been doing, if he was following what Moses had told him to do, he would have been led right from the cleansing of the leper to the cleansing of the priesthood. And that would have led him to the cleansing of the nation. And if he had entered the, if he had led the nation into their cleansing program, they would have received Christ, the Lord Jesus Christ, Jesus, Jehovah, instead of rejecting him. Look at verse chapter 16 now and see how this ties in. This leads right into the cleansing of the priesthood. Let's look at chapter 16. And we're just going to pick a couple verses here. We won't make it like Leviticus 14. But let's just look at chapter 16 here. He's just finished explaining the leprosy cleansing. And now he's going to use very similar terminology when he talks about the cleansing of the priesthood. Let's begin at verse 2. He warns the priesthood about entering into the holy place. Verse 2, and the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto Aaron thy brother, that he come not at all times into the holy place within the veil before the mercy seat, which is upon the ark, that he die. See, before he could enter that holy place, first the priesthood, him, the priest, and the priesthood, and ultimately the nation, had to be cleansed. That had to be the first step. Thus, verse 3, shall Aaron come into the holy place with a young bullock and a sin offering and a ram offering. He's going to go through all these similar offerings that were made at the cleansing of the leper. And look what he's supposed to do in verse 4. Look at this, the whole cleansing thing that's brought out here. He shall put on holy linen coat, and he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh, and shall be, and the idea with linen is it's much easier to keep clean than other types of fabrics. And he shall be girded with linen girdle, and the linen mitre shall be attired, and these are holy garments. They're supposed to be set apart for his purposes. Therefore shall he wash his flesh in water. Remember the leprosy, how much washing was required in that? And he shall take, verse 5, the congregation of the children of Israel, two kids of the goats for a sin offering, one ram for a burnt offering. And he goes through all this again. And here we're going to have two goats. Remember in the leprosy one, we had two birds. One that's sacrificed on the altar, and the other one is sent off into the wilderness. And here we have the two goats, verse 7. Let's look at verse 6, because we have to see this priesthood concept. And Aaron shall offer his bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and his house, the house of priests, the priesthood. And he shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he's going to cast lots. One is going to sacrifice on the altar, and one he's going to send out into the wilderness. Look down at verse 10. But the goat which the lot fell to be a scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement with him and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness. It's building off that leprosy with the two birds. Here we have the two goats, one that's sacrificed, and the other is sent out into the wilderness as part of this. For the birds was a cleansing of the leper. Here we have the goat, the cleansing of Aaron, the chief priest, and the cleansing of the priesthood, and the cleansing of the nation. And just look at verse 16 and just bring out this cleanliness concept. Leviticus 16, 16. And he shall make an atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of the transgressions of all their sins. And so shall he do so for the tabernacle of the congregation that remains among them in the midst of their uncleanness. See what Jesus is doing in Matthew 8. He's sending them to the priest because that should have set in motion the whole cleanliness concept in this priest's mind. It should have kicked off a whole line of activity that would have brought that nation, if it was responded to on the basis of what Moses said, would have brought that whole nation into Israel's cleansing program to receive their Messiah and King. But of course, he doesn't do anything. There's just silence from the priest in Jesus' day. This is what they were supposed to do. This is what was supposed to be kicked off and put into motion. Let's go on the way back to Matthew. Let's stop at Ezekiel. Ezekiel 36, and we'll just see how this is going to play into the whole nation. Oh, we could begin at a bunch of places, but let's just begin at verse 23. This is Ezekiel 36, verse 23. I will sanctify, set apart for his use my great name, which was profaned among the heathen or the Gentiles, which he profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Lord, and saith the Lord God, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you from the countries and will bring you into your own land. And look what the next step is. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean, and all your filthiness from all your idols. Idols, of course, behind the idols are the demons. That's what Jesus is casting out in Matthew. From all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and ye shall keep my judgments, and so forth. But there, just bring that sanctified concept, that cleansing concept. The very first thing Matthew presents as a sign for the nation of Israel draws them into the cleansing required of the nation as a whole. He draws their attention to it through the cleansing of the leper, which should have led to the cleansing of the priest, the chief priest and his family, the priesthood, and that should have led to the requirements, the recognition that the whole nation needed a cleansing. They would have entered into John's cleansing, beginning with water baptism that would have led to the Spirit's baptism, that would lead to the fiery baptism that would result in a believing remnant that's perfectly cleansed, perfectly pure, perfectly able to do all the things God intended for, capable to be the kingdom of priests, the holy nation he designed them to be. This is the purpose of the leprosy trial, leprosy procedure. And actually, as long as we're still here in the Old Testament, you don't have to turn back there. I'm just going to read one verse, but I should have read one more verse in Leviticus 16. If you go to Leviticus 16 and look at the very last verse, Leviticus 14, he explains the why this leprosy program, he takes so much time explaining it. Leviticus 14, 57, why does he go through it? Remember we said it's two chapters, Leviticus 13, Leviticus 14, over 100 verses describing this procedure. And he says in Leviticus 14, 57, he does it to teach when it is unclean and when it is clean. This is the law of leprosy. The law of leprosy is given to teach the whole idea, the whole principle, the whole groundwork for cleansing. And if when he sends them, let's go back to Matthew 8 now. And when he sends them, this leper, back to the priests, if he's expecting them, if they're really following Moses's directions, they should have done that tedious, complicated, intricate, extensive, ritualistic process over 8 days that we just read in Matthew and Leviticus 13 and 14. Matthew 8, verse 4. And Jesus said unto them, see thou, tell no man, but go in the way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. He He's supposed to go now. This priest should have been investigating him. This priest should have brought to mind this whole cleansing procedure. And when that was set in mind, that would have brought to mind the cleansing of the priesthood and the cleansing of the nation. The very purpose of the whole leprosy ritual is to teach the basis and need for cleansing. And it represents that the nation itself needed this cleansing. And if they had done what they were supposed to do, they would have recognized that Jehovah Rophika was there. Jehovah is I am or I will heal them, Israel. He is there at that time. All right, we'll go ahead and close, and just with a couple last thoughts on the final slide. The priest should have investigated this cleansing of the leper and determined that he was not cleansed, the leper was not cleansed by ointments or other man-made remedies, but by Jesus saying, I will, I am, I am. When he says that, he's declaring, I am Jehovah, your God. They should have realized that Jesus is the Lord, Jehovah Rophika, or Jehovah who heals, has arrived and is manifested in the flesh before them. If they had done what Moses said, they would have, should have come looking, and they should have run out and looked for him so that they could worship and praise him. They should have asked the man, who did this to you? No one can cleanse like that. Who did this? And they should have gone out looking for him, and they should have recognized him. They should have proclaimed him to the whole nation and brought the whole nation into Israel's cleansing program. But instead, they were silent, rejecting Jesus' witness and unbelief. And not long after this, they will progress to rejecting him completely, plotting his destruction and death, joining arms with the Gentiles, placing him on that cross. Let's close with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we're so thankful for